If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today I have Judith Belmont on the show. She has a very long career being a therapist in private practice. She has authored many books, including what we'll be talking about today, which is her newest book, 110 CBT Tips and Tools. But she also has the Anxiety and Stress Solution Deck, A Year of Self-Esteem, Daily Reflections, 5-Minute Self-Care Journal. And we are talking today about CBT. And we've had a couple experts come on and talk about DBT, and we've had a lot of people reference CBT tips, but we really dive into what that looks like today. And what I love about Judith in all of her works is it's very practical. We talk a lot about how, yes, it's so important to change your thoughts because that affects your emotions, but that it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to jump right to the positives, or you don't have to bypass the feelings that come along with it. It's really just being able to recognize when your thoughts are unreliable, which is so common as you're navigating your breakup, thinking things like, I'm unlovable, I'll never find someone like my ex again, I'll never get over this breakup. Being able to take those thoughts and have practical steps on how do we start changing those slightly, and how do we get out of the all or nothing thinking? How do we stop trying to be a fortune teller is another cognitive distortion we talk about. So this was such a great interview, and I really, really recommend that you go out and get her book, 110 CBT Tips and Tools. If you listen to the show, you know I'm such a big fan of the writing and the actions of things to, I just don't believe we can change our thoughts with our thoughts. So this has so many great exercises to do in it. And I know you guys will enjoy Judith's interview. Welcome, Judith, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. It is very exciting to have you on today. And I know this will be so helpful to the listeners.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
So you had a very, very long career doing private practice, and now you've written a host of books. And I really just love your approach of, I mean, I think the theme, and correct me if I'm wrong, is very practical things. Yep. That's like your bread and butter, which we love over here. After working with clients for that long, what stood out to you or what influenced you to really focus on, okay, people need practical tips to be able to help with the different things that they're going through?
I've always been very practically oriented. And when I started as a therapist many years ago, I found that the practical approaches such as CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, just really spoke to me because it taught life skills. And right out of graduate school, I actually got a job as an assertiveness training instructor. Oh, so wow. It was a women's program. And that like opened up a whole new world of speaking, training, presenting. And I learned so many life skills to teach others. And so it became a natural outgrowth. And I ended up being a continuing ed provider for therapists, sort of in my mid-career about 20 years ago. And they were just starting to publish. The continuing ed provider is PESI, which most therapists know because they probably, I think, are the largest continuing ed provider in the country. They do online as well as in-person presentations. And they asked me to write a book. And that's how I fell into publishing. And then from there, I published with other publishers also. But my last book, which was released a few months ago, 110 CBT Tips and Tools, is through this publisher, PESI.
Amazing. And for those that aren't familiar with CBT, can you talk a little bit about what it is? What's the main tenets of it?
Sure. CBT stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. Cognitive means mind. Behavior is behavior. And basically, it focuses on the quality of your thoughts, determine the quality of your life. And it focuses on giving tools and strategies in a variety of different ways through logs, diaries, different techniques that you can focus and identify irrational thoughts and identify cognitive distortions and change the thoughts to healthier thoughts. Because you can't tell yourself, don't feel sad, but you can tell yourself, those thoughts are irrational. How can I change those thoughts so I won't be as sad? So the premise is most of our difficulties with anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, negative thought, negative feelings, they have to do with negative thought habits. And you can't tell yourself not to be hungry, but you can tell yourself the practical thoughts that you can do and strategies to not be sad or depressed or whatever. So cognitive behavior therapy gives people tools so they're empowered, because otherwise you can't say, oh, I shouldn't be so sensitive. You know, that you can't do, but you can identify, I'm labeling myself as sensitive. That's a cognitive distortion. I'm labeling, I'm making myself in a negative light as a one-dimensional person. Am I too sensitive, or I am someone who feels very deeply about things? Just by sticking to the facts instead of your narrative that might be kind of faulty, it might be like Pig Latin, is very, very helpful. But you're not going to be able to identify it if you're so focused on your ants, which are automatic negative thoughts. If your go-to place, let's say someone says, oh no, they can't, you know, they don't want to get together with you. Your go-to place might be, they're rejecting me and they must not like me anymore. They don't want to spend time with me. Those thoughts will create your behaviors, which would be staying away from that person, maybe being very anxious around that person. And then that those are the behaviors, and the thoughts might be, they just don't like me anymore, or maybe they don't like me. So it's like, well, it's a possible. You can positively frame and say, okay, if they don't like me anymore, this certainly isn't evidence because they don't want to go to dinner with me. However, I need to like myself first. And if they don't like me, that's not in my control. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad, unworthy person. So basically, you do a lot of positive self-talk with mixed with a lot of self-compassion. And those are the ingredients of a happier life.
Yeah. And that's a really good distinction, because I think I've always been aware. I mean, my dad's an organizational psychologist. So I was very much raised in the thing of like, your thoughts create your feelings create your behaviors, all of that. But I think the piece that I was missing for a long time was the behavior part. And I remember feeling faulty for a while because I can't just change my thoughts with my thoughts. You know, it felt very like that I got really stuck. So the behavior aspect is, like you were saying, like journaling, doing logs, all of those things, that for me was the missing piece. And this podcast is for people that are going through breakups. And I think the number one thing that I hear about is the obsessive circular thoughts that people get stuck in following a breakup. And I'm curious, what's the mechanism that happens that creates those loops where it feels like, oh my gosh, I can't get out of this. Even though I'm aware it's happening, I still can't feel like I can break through it.
So what I would do with my clients is I would say, all right, I'm going to write down what you just said. So I'm going to write down what you just said, which is, I can't get out of those thoughts. Is that fact or fiction? And actually, that's fiction. These are narratives you tell yourself because you are tying yourself in knots by saying, I can't do it. Actually, it's very hard to do it. So just by the act of reframing, you become what I call a victor instead of a victim. When people are dealing with heartbreak, they often either are putting the other person down or they're putting themselves down, and usually a combination of both. But you know what? Blaming never gets people anywhere. Because when you blame, you end up being in a lot of cynicism and you end up being in a bitter mode. It's much better to be in a forgiving mode and realize that even though there's the hurt, there's growth after hurt. It's just like the five stages of grieving of Kubler-Ross. There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. When people are steeped in the bitterness and the anger, they're never going to get past it. So that's going back to CBT skills. So write down, I can't, just write down your thoughts. I can't get over this. He was the only one for me. I'll never love again, whatever, you know, these things. These are all cognitive distortions because that doesn't make any sense. How do you know he was the only one for you? Because you're not fortune telling. Fortune telling, I'll never get over this. That's a cognitive distortion. We really don't know. So we carry around so many self-limiting beliefs that cause us to be stuck. And only by forgiving the other person for not being able to give you what they didn't have to give, and forgiving yourself for not having things work out, maybe through either some fault of your own or not, it doesn't really matter. You're human and worthy of forgiveness. But I always tell my clients who were expecting someone to be something that they ended up not being, is don't expect to get milk at a hardware store. Sometimes people don't have to give you what they don't have. And sometimes we expect people and even ourselves to deliver what we don't either have to give. So it's all about growing through the hurt, reaching that stage of acceptance instead of being steeped in the bitterness, the bargaining. Well, maybe if I acted this way, maybe he wouldn't have left or whatever. No, because that will just keep you anchored in the past. And we all know the past never changes.
You talked about the fortune-telling cognitive distortion. Can you run through maybe some of the other cognitive distortion? Or, I mean, I don't know how many there are, but if you could run through maybe a few other ones.
Yeah, varieties. Well, just all or nothing thinking. It's just like the can't. I can't get over this. That is such a common matter of talk. People don't realize it's irrational narrative. Just think of some of the songs that you might have grown up with. Okay. I'm a bit older than you. So what I grew up with is Ray Charles' song, I Can't Stop Loving You. That was a very irrational song. So it made a bestseller. It was a gold record, but that wasn't, we're often fed all this idea that we can't do things. So what would be a more rational title? It's hard to stop loving you.
Yeah. But it probably wouldn't sell as well.
It wouldn't sell as well. Right. Yeah. So it's okay. It takes a poetic license. But so many times we believe that kind of stuff. Okay. So all or nothing thinking is one. Labeling. He's such an idiot. I'm such an idiot. What a jerk. Okay. Well, what's a way of rephrasing that? Because that maybe, you know, someone's mom doesn't think he or she is a jerk. You know, that's a matter of perspective. So instead of feeding yourself with very unhelpful labels, either to yourself or other people, be more descriptive. I didn't like that he thought so much more of himself than anyone else. You know, something that was, you know, kind of more specific. Another one, well, the fortune telling is a very big one, particularly in heartbreak, because sometimes people think that they'll never love again. But I'll never forget one of my very first clients when I was in Massachusetts in a youth guidance center. This is before cell phones. This is in the late 70s. And the police brought this teenager into the youth guidance center. And her boyfriend broke up with her. So that was the event. I'll call it A, the act. And the C is the consequence, which is she felt distraught and she actually ran in front of a car. She didn't want to live anymore. But did the boyfriend breaking up with her make her run in front of a car? No. It was the belief. And I said, what were thoughts were going through your mind when you wanted to run in front of a car? And meanwhile, you know, the car stopped. The police came. They ended up just bringing her right to the guidance center. And she actually said those things that I just said. And she was 16. He was the only one for me. I'll never love again. I'm nothing without him. Well, after about a month, she already had another boyfriend. But at the time, she was so distraught because she fed herself all this irrational thoughts that were over extreme. Jumping to conclusions, I'm not lovable. That's another cognitive distortion. That's another thing that she says. Maybe I'm just not lovable enough. Just because you're rejected by one person doesn't mean that's a statement of your human beingness. So yeah. Those are some examples of cognitive distortions.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone listening can, that's gone through a breakup recently, has gone through all of those, the all or nothing, the fortune telling, the jumping to conclusions. And it sounds like, I know for me, when I write things down, you mentioned writing thoughts down, it provides just that little bit of distance or I guess perspective of being able to disconnect myself from it. Are there other ways that you recommend, like a pause or a distance of being able to disconnect from these cognitive distortions?
So by writing the thoughts down, if you have irrational thoughts and don't identify the distortions, you're just going to be feeding yourself a lot of negativity. So I don't think unstructured writing your thoughts down is always so good if it gets you into spiraling out of control.
Interesting. Okay.
So not that it's bad, but you want to make sure it's healthy journaling and not negative journaling. So what CBT does and what I have in my book is many different worksheets, handouts, logs, diary, where it says, for example, that example I gave you, the ABC act is what happened. The consequence is your feelings and your behavior. So you basically have like a chart, you know, of the different columns. And then you identify the thoughts. So I'll never love again. You realize that that is irrational. That's going to make you very upset. And then the fourth column is D, disputing. So we got A, B, C, D, act, belief, consequence, dispute the irrational thought. And then E is the effect of a more rational thought. So the disputing would be, I don't know that I'll never love again, and I need to love myself first, and I am a lovable person and worthy of love. And this is unfortunate and it's painful, but it is not a referendum on me or my future. And then the E would be, you'll feel better, you'll be more relaxed, you'll be more anxious and more confident. And you might go out to parties and not retreat, et cetera. And then the behavior follows. So that would be an example, the ABC diary. That's okay. One. Another one with different columns. Columns is often very helpful.
Can I stop you just for 1 second and I have a follow-up question on the ABC. Is the D and the E, like, can it be more fake it till you make it? Can you write down something that you don't necessarily fully feel fully identify with at that time?
I don't agree with fake it until you make it, because you never want to be fake. You always want to be authentic, never fake it. However, you can isolate healthier alternatives that are more factual. Separate fact from fiction.
Okay.
So it's not like you don't want to be your cheerleader saying, oh, I'm going to feel great, when you don't. You know, it's like telling yourself, oh, be thankful, when you don't be thankful. However, you can look at your irrational thought, you know, this is destroying me. He destroyed my life. Okay, let's take that. You know, he ruined my life. Okay. What's wrong with that? That's completely irrational thinking. That's blaming. That's the cognitive distortion of blaming, that you blame someone else for your feelings and your future. That's a very tall order. And it's just like I said before, getting milk at a hardware store. Don't expect someone to give you what they don't have. They don't have that kind of power. You have that kind of power between your ears. So you need to get real and get authentic and make sure you separate stories you're telling yourself because of your flair for dramatics and what's really factual.
Okay. So it's kind of like taking more, I guess, baby steps is the right word, but like what feels right to you right now and not necessarily like, it's not like a manifesting thing where you're trying to say like, I will feel this way. It's more of what can I identify with right now in this moment.
I think that even though I'm feeling very cloudy and I'm not thinking clearly, I can, just like with a magnifying glass, imaginary magnifying glass, I can identify the lapses in my thought process. You have to like identify that this is actually irrational thinking. For example, I had this woman, she was going through a divorce and they had children together. She came into my office. She said, I can't stand it. He's awful. He's like an ogre. He's like this. I mean, she had all these all or nothing over catastrophizing cognitive distortions. And so I introduce her to the ideas of CBT. And the other thing about CBT, and I'll get back to that in a second, is that it's not just being aware of this. You need to practice it. How are you going to get physically fit if you go to the gym once? Yeah. If you have a personal trainer once, but then you never follow it up, you need to keep on exercising in order to get physically fit. To get mentally fit, you need to keep on doing this, making a log, journaling in a healthy way, identifying the cognitive distortions. Don't expect to just go to a therapist once a week or to read about it and know how to do it. It really takes a lot of practice. So going back to her, I gave her a couple worksheets to go home with. And I had her in the session learn to positively reframe and cognitive restructure. Cognitive restructure is you look at those thoughts and you change it to a healthier thought. So instead of he's making my life miserable, I'm being very challenged by his behavior.
Okay.
One is factual. One is a narrative. One is fiction and it's not rooted in fact. And we found another word for terrible, because when you awfulize and terribleize, which is another type of cognitive distortion, it's like you're going to die tomorrow or like someone you love is dying. Let's put it in perspective. You know, yeah, terminal cancer is awful, but is a breakup a life or death situation? It might feel that way, but no, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And need to keep that in perspective. So we use the word unfortunate. So she came back the next week and she says, I've been practicing on your diaries and your logs. And I just am finding him so unfortunate. Oh, I love that word. So she actually, you know, had fun with it, because she found another word to replace awful, terrible, etc.
One of the most frustrating things for me is when I feel like I'm taking really good care of myself and doing everything right, sleep, water, movement, eating well, and I still feel so blah. Bloating, low energy, irritability. It feels like there had to be something more going on. And that's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part is after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I took the quiz and found out that I'm likely going through estrogen dominance and not metabolizing it well, which can explain my chronic fatigue, overwhelm, bloating, and anxiety. And the quiz recommended Hormone Harmony, which is an herbal formula that fine-tunes the hormonal system. It doesn't just help with estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. It also helps with stress hormones like cortisol, which is a little troublemaker. We often think we need big lifestyle changes to feel better, but in reality, small habits like taking Hormone Harmony every day can have a huge impact on how we feel. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
And I love that you said that it's practice, because I think we all love quick fixes, and we would love, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like some people like or are drawn to the kind of labeling or maybe like more traditional therapy, meaning like getting to your root cause of your trauma and all this kind of stuff. I feel like they like it because it feels like, oh, if I figure that out, then my thoughts will change, when in reality, that's not what happens at all. It's a thing that we need to continuously practice.
I think the past is very informative, but focusing too much on the past focuses too much on things that cannot be changed. And so learning skills now, whatever the past has given you, will make you a lot more resilient. And the past ends up making you, with your skills, you end up getting deeper instead of weaker. And I think that that's a good goal for people who are dealing with heartbreak, that you are becoming maybe more empathetic, becoming deeper. Life didn't go the way you wanted. And how will you reclaim your life in a healthier way?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some things, I have this saying, I used to do inspirational posts when I was trying to promote some of my other books. And this one was shared probably the most, like many, many thousands of people. And there are some things we never get over, but we still get through, and it still is beautiful on the other side. And it was a picture of under a bridge, and there's still flowers on the other side. Maybe we can't get over that bridge, but we can get through it. And maybe don't expect yourself right now to get over it, but figure out how to get through it and deepen your ability to be resilient, empathetic, and learn lessons that will be very valuable moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I like the focus on finding those things that still feel true to you now, like your example you gave of using the word unfortunate versus the terrible, awful, because I think there's sometimes this, people might feel pushed to jump right to, I forgive them, they're a beautiful person, I wish them all the best. You know, when that feels so far away from how you're feeling right now. So being able to go from, they're terrible, they ruined my life, to I'm having a really hard time and they're very unfortunate. I think, like, I like that progression. I think it feels, like you said, a lot more authentic to where people are at and recognizing where people are at.
But I also think that people shouldn't should themselves going through the pain, because just because you think rationally doesn't mean it's not going to be painful. And just make sure your thoughts are in line with authentic healing rather than making it hard for you to heal because of the stories you tell yourself. For example, if you say things with cognitive distortions, such as, you know, my life is ruined, that's not going to be helpful. But if you think and you change that my life is ruined thought to I am so sad to be without this person. It's really difficult right now for me to go on. Okay, that's being human. And appreciate that it's okay to be human. It's okay to get deeper. It's okay to feel weak, because sometimes admitting weaknesses make you actually deepen and make you more healthy. Maybe it's time to ask for help, to go to a therapist, to share the burden, you know, with other people who are going through real difficulties in their lives.
I feel like you're helping me so much understand CBT in a better way. And I'm just calling myself out here, that I've had this preconceived notion that it's hopping over the part that you just mentioned of allowing yourself to be sad and just bypassing the emotion part. But I No. I really like that distinction that you made. Not at all.
It gives you the tools to not have destructive emotions, because emotions, you can't tell yourself, just get over it, but you can look at the thoughts that make you so stuck. It just helps empower you.
Yeah.
And I think that CBT started as rational emotive therapy in the 1950s with Albert Ellis. And then Aaron Beck coined the term cognitive behavior therapy. Rational emotive therapy was a bit callous because it was sort of kind of almost making fun of people's emotions and, you know, whatever. But no, CBT is quite humane. And it also includes a lot of current kind of theories, such as mindfulness, being present oriented, not so anchored on the past.
Yeah.
Because when the past gets in your eyes and you can't seem to get out of it, you're going to end up pushing a lot of people away in your present. And you want to make sure you don't undermine your behavior now by having the past get in your eyes.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people do that, especially in breakups where, I mean, I just think community is such an important part of healing through a breakup, but I do think a lot of people can push people away in their current because they are so focused on the past or the fortune telling or, you know, whatever other cognitive distortion they're stuck in.
I think also a lot of people, when they have a breakup, they get too steeped in blaming either the other person or themselves. And if you are blaming yourself, it's really important to practice self-compassion. And I call self-compassion the new self-esteem, because it used to be thought that people who are successful, smarter than average, above average, have great kids, have a nice home, you know, wealth, whatever, they're generally, it's the recipe for happiness. Actually, it really isn't. We all know very miserable people who are very successful and wealthy, etc. But what people seem to have that are truly happy is the ability to be compassionate and forgiving of themselves. And I have been amazed at so many clients that I have seen that feel like if they give themselves compassion, they are being either conceited or they're not pushing themselves to be better. And they think that they don't deserve it because they're ashamed of what they've done, or they just don't feel like they're being selfless enough. But just like the flight attendant tells us, if you're traveling with young children, you put your mask on yourself before others, helping others. So many times we feel like it's selfish because maybe the way we were raised, that is being selfish. So I would say self-compassion, self-care, forgiveness, self and others is a major key to healing.
I completely agree. I do think that's really connected to self-esteem. And that was actually something that I wanted to ask you about, because I know you have, I think, a couple works on self-esteem. And it's something that I think is very intertwined with breakups. It feels like losing a partner takes away self-esteem. And I had this distortion for a long time that I would get self-esteem. I had it in my head when I turned 30, I would get self-esteem because that would mean that I had the partner and the kids and the career and like all that stuff. And I had to realize that it was not that at all. It was something that I had to build up to. And so can you talk a little bit about self-esteem?
Well, self-esteem is thinking that you're enough. And I cannot tell you how many clients over the years have said to me in different ways, but often in this particular way, I'm just not good enough. And it's like there's something flawed. And so one CBT technique that is very good, I think, is getting to your core beliefs. If your core belief is that you're not good enough, you're going to have a lot of offshoot beliefs, such as, it's terrible, he doesn't like me, you know, or she doesn't like me, I'll never get over this, whatever. Okay, so you ask yourself, what would that mean to me if that person rejects me? That would mean I'm not an appealing person. And then you dig to the core, you made me have downward arrows on a piece of paper. Okay, if that was so, what would that mean to me? It would mean that most other people would not be attracted to me. And then you ask yourself, okay, if that was true, what would that mean? It would mean that I am inferior. If that was true, what would that mean? It would mean I'm not good enough. So that core belief, I'm not good enough, you might be distracted by those other beliefs, but the main belief is I'm a loser, I'm a failure, I'm not good enough. I can't tell you how many people describe themselves as failures to me when their relationships did not work. And I said, what about the other person? Were they a failure? Not really. I mean, it was them. They were the one that failed. And you know what? First thing, failure gives you the opportunity to succeed. Most people who are successful because of their failures. And I am always amazed at how people have turned failure into success. But sometimes people stop there and say, I'm a failure. And that's it.
Yeah.
Like a fact, and it's not. So how would you reframe that? I am someone who has experienced a lot of setbacks in my life, and I have not handled things as well as I wish I knew now. But forgive yourself for not having the foresight to know what is now so obvious in hindsight.
Yes, that's something that I tell myself all the time of, you did the very best you could with the information you had at the time. And that's like, you can't expect me to have more than that. But I think that's really important, especially, and I've told people that too. It's like, you can connect all these dots after, in hindsight, when you're looking back on the relationship. But at the time, you weren't even looking for dots. You had no reason to look for dots at the time. Like, you were just enjoying your relationship. And I also love, I want to like go back to what you said of, was the other person a failure? That's such a good counter to, I'm a failure because this relationship ended. We often don't think of the other person as a failure.
It's a joint thing. But
yeah.
Why do we look at it in terms of failures? It was a huge disappointment. But how do you move on from your disappointments? And that word failure, I've had so many people tell me, I failed. There was one woman, I'll never forget. She was in her mid-30s. She was in front of my coffee table, and she had her hand way up. She said, I've had this many failures, and I can't afford one more. And I asked her what they were. I said, wow, that's a lot of failures. And she could only name two. And they weren't such big deals.
Yeah.
But to her, they loom larger than life, and it defined her. Her past defined her. So she ended up being so anxious and perfectionistic because she gave herself only a tightrope to walk on rather than a wide plank. And through therapy, she learned that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to not know then what you know now. It's okay to reinvent yourself. It's okay to not be perfect, because being a perfectionist and being hard on yourself, because perfectionists are very hard on themselves, and having a breakup is a very toxic combination because you're going to assume a lot of the responsibility. And it's unfair because you know what? You need to talk to yourself like you would a best friend. Would you say the same thing to your best friend? Like, oh boy, I really screwed up. I failed in this relationship. Would you tell that to your best friend? No. Why do we reserve the worst things to tell ourselves? We don't deserve it.
Why do we do that? Do you have an answer for that? Because I think that's so interesting. Like, I use that all the time of, what would you tell a friend? And it's always so radically different than what we tell ourselves.
That's actually a technique I have in the book.
Okay.
Is distance yourself and pretend that a person you very much admire said the same things as you are. What would you tell them? Would you say, yeah, I agree that you're really a jerk and you're a failure? No, you would say you're a beautiful person. I love you. You didn't know then what you know now, whatever. But we are notoriously hard on ourselves. And we often take responsibility when there is no fault of your own other than your own self-damaging, self-limiting thoughts. So sometimes we need to just shift our perspective slightly so that we look at things in a different way and get rid of those ants, automatic negative thought. And one way to do this visually is by folding your arms. If you could fold your arms. Yeah. Okay. Do you have your right or left arm on top?
I have my right over my left.
Okay. Same with me. But in a group, when I do live presentations, it's like about 40, 60, 50, 50. Now try it the other way and put the other arm on top. How does it feel?
Weird. Yeah, it feels
very weird, very awkward. Yeah. So I show that to people that sometimes we need to shift our perspective slightly. To some people, they can adapt better. But for us, it might feel very weird, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. And that will account for sometimes things are not no-brainers that we wish they were.
Yes. And that it's a practice. It's a practice. That takes time. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this. I highly, highly recommend that people get your book. I mean, there's 110 tips in there.
110 CBT tips and tools. And it gives you a lot of hands-on worksheets, handouts, mini quizzes, so that you can keep on practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just think yourself to better thoughts. You have to know how to do it. And so many times we don't know how to feel better because we don't know how to think better. And we think we should just say, okay, get over it. It's already been 6 months now. Get over it. That's like cruel.
Yeah.
Because we don't get over things, we get through them, and we don't do it until we have the tools to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think breakups are such a good opportunity to build that toolkit that you'll use far beyond the breakup.
It could be an amazing gift.
Yeah.
Hugely amazing gift. Sometimes the most messiest, difficult breakups can be just what we needed in order to grow. And yes. To learn the lessons that we need to learn.
I could not agree more. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. And if you want to learn more about all of your works, is the best website belmontwellness.com?
Yeah, belmontwellness.com. But also you can visit my author page on Amazon, Judith yes. Belmont.
Which I will link that in the show notes so
that
people
would be
can see.
Fabulous. On my website, I have a lot of video excerpts and audio excerpts of podcasts. So yours will be on there, certainly. And also, I have a lot of handouts and worksheets that are taken from some of my books. So you can kind of get a free sample of a lot of different resources as examples of what you can do actively to change your thoughts, to change your life.
Thank you so much again. I highly encourage everyone to go out and get 110 tips and tools for CBT. And I just really believe that all the work that you put out in this interview is something that people can walk away with and start actively implementing into their life, which is really the goal of the show and how people can start actively healing from their breakup. So thank you, Judith, so much again.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.